Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moo. Hey gang, how are you? Black Friday is here. Happy Black Friday to those who celebrate. Kevin Goatee here. It's time for a hot new episode of Gutting the Sacred Cow. This week we've got Bradford Ullman from Slash Film, and he's going to do Dr. No. So dust off all of your terrible Sean Connery accents and get ready to see if Bradford can take down the first James Bond film of all time. Joining me as co-host, old reliable himself, AC Rowe. Love that dude. So, strap in. Let's see if Bradford Ullman can take down the genesis of the James Bond franchise here on Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best movie review / movie debate podcast out there. And please leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review on your podcast platform of choice. You know we love it. And I love screenshotting my favorite reviews and posting them. Without further ado, let's hear about Bradford hating Dr. No.
Gather around, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. I know some people kinda like it, yeah, it's trending right now. Yeah, that doesn't matter, cause we're gutting the sacred cow.
Bye, Felicia. AC Rowe, guest host again. How are you, pal? Nate.
I'm
film.
Bye, Felicia. How many movies has it been? That was originally, it's like Boys in the Hood or something like that, right? No? Friday.
Friday is correct. I was about to jump over to our guest, Brad Ullman. Brad, how you doing, man? What's new and exciting?
Not much. You know, just working, trying not to die, and that's pretty much it.
What are you living? Are you right now over in Russia fighting armed forces with the Ukrainians or trying not to die?
It's pretty drastic. It's mostly just, you know, life every day, just, you know, existing.
Is there a high probability of death where you are, and do we need to send help?
Gosh, I mean, you know, considering how much ranch we have here in Indiana, like that's probably a pretty big risk, especially
heart attack, high cholesterol.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That kind of stuff, you know.
I was going to say, are you going to be part of a hunting accident anytime soon? That would be.
Gosh, I hope not.
Oh, that'd be my. Make sure you wear orange. Don't wear the brown and it looks like brown or green you're wearing. That's bad camouflage colors. Kevin Goatee, AC Rowe, joined by Brad Ullman, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Folks, we're so glad you decided to join us yet again. And since you are joining us, if you have not yet done so, if you're a new listener, please leave us that 5-star rating, 2 or 3 sentence review. Brad has joined us to take down, as you hear this will be the second James Bond film done on this podcast. And he went right for the OG Dr. No. A budget in 1962 of $1 million, a box office gross of $59.5 million. Turn that into 2022 money. I did. $9 million budget. $540.2 million gross.
What I could do with $9 million right now would not. I mean, what they did with $9 million, the equivalent in that film, actually impresses the hell out of me. I would have thought it would have been a lot higher.
You know what they didn't spend the money on?
Talent?
Fight choreography.
No, they did not spend the money on fight choreography. They didn't spend the money on the set either. Those red stripe boxes were completely
empty. Oh, you shut your mouth. That's in my notes, too. Oh,
you love me. I was so bad, but it did make me think of the old red stripe commercials, right, which are probably problematic. But boo, scary foot doctor. Yay, red stripe. You remember those commercials?
I don't actually, but okay.
I'll send you a link.
IMDb, as we know, is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. We're going to go to our guest. Brad, what do you think IMDb has for Dr. No?
I'm going to take a guess and say 7.2.
AC Rowe.
I'm going to say a guess because I'm going to say a guess of 8, but I've got another guess because I like to take my guess and then I like to go check it. And I'm going to guess that Brad has actually been on IMDb today.
Yes, I think so too, because it's 7.2 on the nose. No,
holy shit. I've been on the Wikipedia page for this movie. I did not look at the IMDb. That's insane.
Someone is the winner of two showcases, AC Rowe, under suspect circumstances.
Yes, I think we're going to have to challenge.
Rotten Tomatoes, boys, is a 1 through 100 scale. I'm going to go to my co-host, AC Rowe. What do you think Rotten Tomatoes has for the critics of Dr. No?
I'm going to guess it was like 87.
Brad, what do you have for the critics?
Now, this one, I will say, I do know from looking up stuff today, because I believe it's 95%.
You should just say I recuse myself. But yes, sir, you are correct. It is 95% of Rotten Tomatoes. Do you know what the audience score is? Yes or no?
No, I don't remember that one.
We will go to you then for... Actually, no, it's not your turn. Fuck it. Actually, no, we'll go back to you. Sorry. Audience score. What do you have?
I'll say 98.
Ooh! You're even higher than, like, Avengers Endgame or whatever. AC, what do you have?
I'm going to say it's around 85.
82. Close.
Oh. Close. I didn't eat.
Quotes, the obvious, ubiquitous Bond, James Bond. And how about dinner, James? Oh, I'd be court-martialed for illegal use of government property. Those cheeky Brits and those innuendos are masterful, aren't they? How about this one? You'll be sorry. You'll all be sorry, you rats. That's some Scorsese-type dialogue right there.
Hot on.
Are you looking for shells? No, I'm just looking. Pithy. What do you have, AC, for quotes? Anything jumping out at you that I did not get on the quote side?
Do you need help? Quite sure you don't. Jack Lord to Bond at the very end of the film. That's the one. I mean, there are a bunch throughout, but that's the one that stands out the most to me. I'm going through my notes right here. Oh, it's a Dom 55. Would be a pity to waste it. Yeah. I prefer the 53.
Yeah. How about you, Brad? Quotes jump out at you.
Gosh. I mean... Man, so when Honey Rider introduces herself and she's like, "Why are you laughing?" And she's like, It's just that kind of reaction. The thing is, I was so distracted like throughout this movie too, just like how frustratingly, you know, bad it all is. That, you know, like the most memorable quotes are the ones that like you guys already named, especially since it introduces, you know, Bond, James Bond. The government property one was one that I was going to talk about, because there's, yeah, man, pervert James Bond is in full display in this one.
Well, and
that's what it was in the book.
Speaking of quotes, though, let's talk about shaken, not stirred, right? So that comes in with Dr. No tell, and ever, you know, he's famous for he's wanting the martini with the lemon shaken, not stirred. In the beginning, though, it's in the hotel, and the guy says, "Mixed, not stirred, to your specifications." I've always wondered, is James an idiot, or is he trying to stay sober? Because you would not ever shake a martini unless you wanted to dilute it. If you're an international man of mystery and you know what you're doing, you would stir it. Shaking a clear liquid, one, makes it cloudy and the drink doesn't look good, but also it dilutes it up to like 20%.
Considering how much drinking he does pretty much the rest of the time, I'm betting he's not trying to stay sober.
That's what I'm saying. And so it's like, who came up with that line and thought it was classy? And how many bars shake their martinis because of it? And how many people order it that way because they think they're cool?
I did that.
A proper martini should be stirred.
I did that in my 20s, and the bartender rolls my eyes and I go, whoops, I guess this is not a smart move. And I had a bartender friend go, yeah, no one does that. Blame James Bond. That's dumb shit. Five fun facts. I'm going to tell you a bunch of names they considered, but actually, you know what, guys, who do you think was the first choice for producers? The producer's choice for James Bond, but I will say he turned down the role because he was considered to be too old and was also hesitant to sign a contract for 3 movies. Megastar back in the day. Who did the producers eyeball for James Bond first?
I actually know the answer for this.
Then don't say a thing, yeah. AC Rowe.
Was he British?
No.
Frank Sinatra?
No. Cary Grant.
There you go.
So the other was working because also the salary that he would want was going to equal Dr. No's entire budget. So Cary Grant was out there asking for $1 million back in the 60s to do a film. Before Connery was cast, they considered Stanley Baker, Rex Harrison, Trevor Howard, Richard Johnson, Patrick McGoohan, David Niven, the only one I've heard of, and Richard Todd. David Niven, of course, would go on to play a spoof of Bond in 1967's Casino Royale. Fun fact number two, Ian Fleming's top choice for villainous role of Dr. No, who happened to be his cousin. Do you know this one, Brad?
So I do remember reading that he did want his cousin in the role, and I'm blanking. Oh, no, now I just remembered, so I'll recuse myself again.
AC, I'll give you a hint. This guy played a Bond villain in later films, but this was Ian Fleming's top choice for Dr. No. Who was it?
Your hint's not going to help me much. Let's go ahead and defer to the research Brandon's done. I apologize.
Oh, I'll
Brandon.
I'll spill those beans. There you go, Brad.
Oh no, I'm here. No, sorry. Yeah. I was confused because I thought there was somebody else. I'm Brad.
I'm sorry, I got your name wrong twice.
That's why I was confused. All right, so yeah.
The answer, of course, being Christopher Lee, who was in The Man with the Golden Gun. The least irksome of the Roger Moore series for me. Number three, Bond was not supposed to say Bond, James Bond. In the script, it was written as I am James Bond, but Connery thought this was weak and decided to go off script with the line. In the first few takes, Connery did not pause, and it wasn't really working. When he paused to light a cigarette between Bond and James Bond, history was made.
Impressive.
In the novel, Dr. No, Honey Rider is naked in her first appearance. The filmmakers wanted to stay true to this, but censorship prevented them from depicting nudity. Shame on them, because she is delicious.
There's a lot that I'm surprised got through the censors in this.
Well, there's another one. This also put the kibosh on another nude scene. Sylvia Trench was supposed to be naked when Bond finds her playing golf in his apartment.
She looked good in the pajama top, though.
I thought that was more of his Oxford shirt.
Yeah, I thought it was an Oxford shirt, but when she turns and looks, I'll have to go back and watch it again. I think it's just his pajama top. It's got the weird buttons on it.
And number five, an early draft of the screenplay made the monkey. I just fucked that up. Made the villain a monkey. The villain was supposed to be a monkey. That is, Dr. No would turn out to be a simian idol, a monkey god worshipped by the island natives, though he'd have to have a human avatar who had a capuchin monkey of his own. Producer Albert Broccoli was appalled and told screenwriters to go back to the novel and come up with a less ridiculous nemesis who was more faithful to what Fleming had written.
That explains why when I looked up the film today, it actually popped up other people watch Planet of the Apes. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But that might have been a fun movie, though. We should make that.
A monkey is that? That would be, God, what was that? Never mind. I was going to say it was Indiana Jones 4, but it's a joke that just I can't get out of my mouth properly. Next, let's go to the herd, as we call them, our fans who have questions for Brad in Ask a Gutter. Let's fire it off. At Nemirovsky, this is an easy question with a hard answer. Who is your favorite top Bond girl of all time?
So all time, I'm going with Ava Green as Vesper Lynd, just because.
Excellent choice.
Incredible in Daniel Craig's movies. And like, she's the one who totally just like rips James Bond to shreds. She was incredible.
I was going to say Domino from Thunderball. I find her insanely hot. And also, who is the chick who married Ringo Starr? She was in that one.
Barbara Bach.
Holy shit. She was. I rewatched it recently. What a knockout.
Was a cool character too, because she's like, she's Agent Triple X, and like she definitely gets the better of Bond on several occasions.
Her sister is married to Joe Walsh.
Wow.
Can you imagine that Thanksgiving? Joe and Ringo.
And of course, shitty film, but she's an absolute smoke show, and that would be Halle Berry in Die Another Day. She's another.
Whoever it was that played Xenia on a top in one of the Pierce Brosnan.
Anki Janssen. Yeah. I adore her.
She was strong in that.
Very much so. You know, it's funny, a lot of the Bond films, the secondary Bond women are hotter than the primary ones. AC, who's your number one Bond gal?
Yeah, I'm just going to stick with Denise Richards. I mean, it's a great choice. Not now, but then, yeah. But her name was Christmas something.
Dr. Christmas Jones. That's it.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to spend July and Christmas. That was a line.
That's a good line.
That was a terrible film. Terrible film. But she's who was better in late 90s than Denise Richards?
She had a run. And then Charlie Sheen happened.
Yeah. so did all that tainted blood. Next question. Let's see. Nope, that's in Spider-Man 1. Oh, at Race, oh, good old Race to Canis. At Almighty Ray from, of course, the Who Would Win show. Old James Bond movies are ripe to get taken down a peg. I'll ask, what is your favorite spy movie with James Bond off the table?
I mean, any of the Mission Impossible movies immediately.
Yes, correct answer.
With the exception of Mission Impossible 2, which sucks, but all the other Mission Impossible movies, take any one of them, and I love them.
See, I'm the one of the few guys who actually, I understand why 2 sucks, why people hate it. I get it. I like it. I think 3 is the worst. It had one of the greatest villains, but the whole plot and the action was just at the last 3 Mission Impossibles. I don't shut up about how great Tom Cruise. He's the best action hero in the last 25 years, Cruise. The last 3 Mission Impossibles are out of the stratosphere amazing, especially Fallout. That just broke the mold and then some. I would choose number 2, though, as Jason Bourne, the first and the third films. The second sucked and the fourth was trash. What about you, AC? What do you have?
You're forgetting Spies Like Us. Come on, man.
No, I'm not. That film was all. I rewatched it recently. That film is dreadful.
Yeah, but it's the greatest spy film of all time. It's got Donna Dixon in it. Come on.
Mm-hmm. And then look at that. Now she's heir to half the Crystal Skull vodka empire. Here we are.
She did well.
We're going to close up the old Ask a Gutter. And now, listen, let's actually, I'm going to throw things a little bit differently because people always have plugs in the end. Let's make them in the middle or actually in the early part so we don't get that skipped over. Brad, what are you up to? Where can the folks find you? What are you doing?
So I am an editor and writer at slashfilm.com. That is my normal day job, always writing about assorted movies and TV shows over there. Sometimes I appear on our Slash Film Daily podcast as well. And just like everybody else, I also have a podcast of my own called Go Flix Yourself, available on iTunes and Spotify and all that jazz. We talk about movies, talk about recent trailers, shoot the shit, whatnot. Me and a couple of my friends who are super into movies like I am. We also have a podcast called the 10 to 1 podcast, where we've been doing for about a year and a half now, where we review and recap every new episode of Saturday Night Live. So we're in season 48 right now. And on a random side thing, on Instagram, if you check out Look at Brad's Junk, you won't find pictures of my junk, but you will find a lot of pictures of new snack food, soft drinks, fast food and stuff that I post about and keep up with. So if you want to know about new chips and pop and that kind of thing, check that Instagram out at Look at Brad's Junk.
AC, what about yourself? What are you up to?
I'm executive producing a new show that will air on Hulu. Before it's got to air before September 30th to fall within this budget year, so it's it'll be a summer release for Hulu next year. I can't talk about what the show is yet, or even the studio that we're actually doing it for, but I got a new project coming out on Hulu next year. I'll tell you all about it, maybe come back on the podcast, talk about it. Doing that, working on an actual travelogue podcast myself, that should be coming out in the spring, and I'll tell you more about that later. You can find me, well, I can't talk about anything. Can I, Kevin? It's all these stupid non-disclosure agreements we have to sign. I hate it. I sound like, you know, I should go, you'll read about it in the trades. But in reality, they haven't been announced yet, but my paychecks are cashing. I'm executive producing that new show for Hulu. You can find me on Instagram at AC_Rowe. And you can find me on Twitter at AmNotKevinBacon.
Or you can just say, find me in the Variety write-ups because, you know, I'm hot shit. That's how I would say, that's how I'd phrase it when I saw one of my shows. KevinGoatee.com. Don't forget, leave a rating for this very fine podcast if you want to advertise with us, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. And then, of course, guttingthesacredcow.com for all fun stuff to buy. Cool shirts, hats, bags, all that cool stuff. We have it there. Support the podcast, and we thank you for being part of our little family every week. So now, AC, let's have Brad come out here and see if he's going to try and take a fatal swipe at one of America and Britain's all-time favorite Randy Talk extraordinaire masters, James Bond and Dr. No, and gut the
sacred
cow.
Love that Zoom sync.
I need the clapper. There we go.
So just to kick things off, like right from the bat, this movie kind of just like taints what we all know that James Bond has become, because you have the classic opening sequence where he walks down and you see the point of view through the barrel, and he's wearing that stupid fucking trilby hat, which doesn't look cool at all. It makes him look like he's just out for a walk in the rain in London or something like that. And he wears this hat throughout the opening sequence of this up until Live and Let Die. They change it once that movie comes around, and it just makes him, it doesn't make him look cool at all. Like this, it's just a silly hat, and he doesn't even wear it except one time throughout this entire movie. And he wears it when he's sitting in the car getting driven away from the airport for a bit. He doesn't even wear it later when he drives to the one of the Bond girls' houses who betrays him, and that's when his hair's all blown in the wind, everything. He just carries it around and tosses it, and it's like it's terrible. Like, why even have him have the hat and make him look less cool when he points and turns and shoots a gun?
Well, two things. One, what's up with the hate on the Trilbies? Christian Finnegan absolutely hated Trilbies when we did Blues Brothers. He talked about it quite a bit. I didn't even know that was the name of a hat. Second, it wasn't him. It was another actor.
No, wrong. It was a producer, because I have that written down in my notes. It was not okay. Bond.
But it's James Bond, though. So, right. It doesn't matter who plays him. They're still making James Bond look bad with that hat. And I think the Blues Brothers pull off the Trilby hat infinitely better than James Bond does, because it just doesn't feel like a suave secret agent hat to me. It feels like a businessman hat who is like chasing after a newspaper blowing down the street. I'll start off with a few just weird random nitpicks that I noticed before I get into the bigger stuff. Did you guys notice the same damn bird sounds throughout the entire movie? Just a repetition of the exact same bird that you hear whenever James Bond is walking outside and it's a sunny day. The same sound effect used over and over again.
I did not hear that.
Missed that myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did it sound like?
I can't do bird sounds very well, but I'll just say repeated whistling sounds or tweeting.
Oh, I thought this was an Autobahn podcast you were doing here.
Also, did anyone else think it was weird that when he's driving to the Bond girl's house, Miss Toro is her name, I think, that she, all for whatever reason, they hold on her giving him driving directions. Like, it's the sexiest thing imaginable. They do this slow crossfade from him driving to him arriving at the house, and it's just her droning on and on. Oh, you'll make a left turn here, and then, oh, watch out because there's a dog with a limp, and you don't want to hit him, and drive around the factory, and rip-da-da-da-do. The sexiest thing is a girl reading driving directions.
Dude, the funniest ever, I dated this girl for a little bit, and she was so bad with directions. I go, put your dad on the phone. This is before MapQuest. This is in the 90s, by the way. I go, put your dad on the phone. So I could, he's like, oh, yeah. So you get up at exit 142, you make a right onto Route 22, left, right, and then boom, you're here. It's just so funny to hear people having to give directions like back in the day. Like, holy shit, that was a thing. And again, with all the apps and even...
But outside of New York, I hate it when somebody says go east or west without the street numbers to tell me where to go. Right. Let me get out my compass and look at it. What position is the sun in? But like where I'm from, the directions they give, and it's always the same. Do you know? Because originally I'm from the South, Brad. Do you know where the Walmarts used to be? It's not where anything is. It's you go up to where the Walmarts used to be, and then you turn left, and you go, the Johnsons used to live there, and you turn right, but go to the Walmarts.
Oof.
That's sexy, isn't it?
Walmart is super sexy.
Especially when you can score trucker meth in the parking lot. Like, yeah, I know that place really well. Oh, I mean, I've heard about it.
Well, Brad, not to like argue semantics, it's not Walmart, it's Walmarts.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
And it's the Walmarts.
No,
that does sound very Southern. Now, who in their right mind would believe that this big diesel fire-throwing monstrosity is a dragon? Like, you'd have to be blind to think that this thing is anything other than a mechanical thing. So the fact that Quarrel and even Honey Rider thinks, oh yeah, there's totally a dragon on this island. It's like, no, it's just a big tank that shoots fire out of it. Nothing about it looks like a dragon.
Yeah, I'll get into that. My nose, but yeah, I hear you.
I think that there are a couple of things that are a little problematic with race in the film. But also they play her as uneducated.
Very naive.
And so, you know, the whole thought is people who aren't as good as me might believe that that was a dragon.
But hold on. Sure. She's no dummy. She said she read read all the encyclopedias. So she's not dumb.
All the way up to T.
Yeah.
Still learning. Okay, so next thing I have here is there's such an exaggerated use of the famous James Bond theme to the point where it doesn't even feel cool in this movie. He plays the guitar thing, the down 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 down, as he's walking across the hotel and asking for a memo. Like, oh, that, wow, cool, James Bond. How suave of you.
But that's what made it the iconic Bond film. Right. Was this the first Bond film you'd ever seen, Brad?
No, not at all.
So that's the thing, is that's how they established it as a thing. It's like putting a catchphrase in a TV show. And
oh, no, for sure. But yeah, there's a better way to use such a cool theme rather than just having it with him walking across a hotel lobby to get a memo.
But it's hold on, though.
Remember, they could license.
But here's the thing, too, though. Remember this, and I have a note, and I'll get into it in a minute. The hotel receptionist is giving the old up and down
every scene.
So that's why I think the theme plays like, oh, this guy's a baller. He gets his own theme. And then he's got his own theme to the point where the fucking hotel receptionist is giving him the old hairy eyes. And I think it's more of like a Pavlovian thing with the audience. Like, yeah, hot women checking him out. This guy's the bomb. Here you go. Fire up the theme song.
She checked him out so much, I kept waiting for her to be a villain. Right. Like, it was so obvious. Like, I kept expecting her to, like, give a memo to somebody to break into his room.
That and, hey, he would look over at seat catcher, like, staring at him, go to, like, a Jenner. She needs a mop and bucket.
Okay, so a big thing here. You hinted about this before, about the fight choreographer. The action in this movie is abysmal. From the car chase to the hand-to-hand combat sequences, no one in this movie looks like they can actually fight. And every time things are supposed to feel like exciting or suspenseful, it is executed so poorly. And this is mostly a product of the fact that, like, they hadn't really figured out how to, like, safely do big stunts, you know, in the 1960s and whatnot. And that's fully understandable. But it's just there are no, like, thrills or exhilarating moments here, or even moments where you feel like there's suspense. And they try to build it up with, you know, different swells of the orchestra. The score is easily the best part of this movie, for sure. But, like, the fact that they have to use this, you know, big horns, you know, swells when he's smashing a spider with a shoe. Come on. Like that. That's the big threat here, is that he has to get up and you have to do the big, you know, brass snares when he's smashing every single time with the shoe.
Why was his face sweaty in that scene, but none of the rest of his body was?
Because he's so sexy.
Because hottest fuck in Jamaica. I don't know.
Did you guys notice, or did you read about this, that they didn't actually have the spider crawl on Sean Connery?
Yeah, I knew this. I had my five fun facts, but I opted for something more fun.
Yeah, he was terrified of spiders. So if you look, you can see that they had like a thing of glass between him, and you can see the shadow on him as opposed to the spider actually being on him. But yeah, besides that,
I've been scared of that spider.
Well, that's the other thing too, is like, and this kind of goes with a little bit something I'll deal with later as far as like the villains in this movie, but that spider, not venomous, not at all.
I what was that? I mean, I'm not a spider expert.
It was a tarantula.
Yeah, tarantula.
But hey, it was going to kill Greg Brady in the Brady Bunch, so come on, don't take that away from me.
Didn't a tarantula, wasn't that the cause of all those spiders and arachnophobia?
No, that was definitely a different spider than a tarantula.
Oh, all right. I saw that 25 years ago. Sure.
But yeah, overall, just the action in this movie is really bad. Even like with the final fight, and this is part of a bigger problem I have with Dr. No as a character, but there's no real fight there. And like, it's not exciting in the least.
Yeah, that, well, I'll talk about that too. But yeah, that was pretty anticlimactic, that final 15 minutes with him. That's for sure.
And then what's the deal with like Dr. No in general? Because he seems to be a pretty bad villain. I don't know like what the deal is with the henchmen that he hires, but you have the guys that are like, they're referred to as the three blind mice. Like, I don't know what benefit they really get from pretending to be blind. I'm sure that maybe they're suspected a little bit less, but they also don't really do a very good job of hiding. Like, they almost try to shoot Bond in like right in front of the hotel with witnesses all around, and then they're like, oh no, we missed out on this one, we better get out of here.
It tied in with the theme song that they put in the credits, that was the bridge into the opening scene.
Yeah, exactly. And so then we have the stupid spider, which isn't even venomous, and I don't know why you would rely on, you know, a spider to actually kill this supposedly extremely skilled super spy that has found you on your island, and you're just going to leave it and hope that the spider knows that he's supposed to kill James Bond. He crawls all over his skin, and the spider crawls onto the pillow before Bond even gets a chance to like react to it. So the spider wasn't even going to kill him if he got a chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why does Dr. No peek at James Bond while he's sleeping in his lair?
Ah, fucker, I have that in here.
He lifts up the sheet with his black metal arms and just takes a glance. Why is he checking out Sean Connery's hairy, glistening chest? I don't understand what he's doing there.
I mean, can you fault the man? You're only human after all.
Fair. That's fair. I mean, I can't say that I wouldn't want to peek at Sean Connery's chest if I were given the option.
You got plenty, absolutely lots of opportunities in the film. It's like, take your shirt off of him.
It's an hour and a half before we actually meet Dr. No in person.
Yeah.
And like, that creates an air of mystery, sure, but when we finally meet him, it's super underwhelming, and there's nothing that's really all that menacing about it. No matter how hard Joseph Weissman tries as Dr. No, I just didn't really feel like there was any air of villainy coming from this guy. He felt like a businessman to me.
Well, but the way that they did do it, and I hate to say you have to take it for what it is, right? But this is one of those you have to take it for what it is. The way they set that up influenced a ton of other movies. It influenced, I mean, Inspector Gadget and the scene where Jason Lee's character in The Incredibles finds them for the first time. The set looks a lot like the set from Dr. No. So, I mean, it, whatever they did was effective enough that it lived in the minds and hearts of people and in the zeitgeist long enough that it, Dr. No as a character and using that disembodied voice to talk to the henchmen, to talk to the characters, to only see pieces of them to make them more menacing, has lived and continued on, due in large part as a result of this film.
No, for sure. The elements living on show that, like, there are things in here that are interesting, but if they need to be used in a way that actually, I think, is more effective, which did follow this. Even in other James Bond movies, I think do it better than this. But like there's just the way Dr. No is portrayed is the mystery doesn't really provide for a satisfying. That doesn't make the conclusion any more satisfying. Like the lead up to it is like, oh, so there's definitely this air of mystery and it's kind of compelling. But then once you actually get there, it's just like, oh, this is it. Like this is what we have. And also, yeah. Dr. No shows the hands of Spectre way too early. This is something, it's like Spectre should have been saved for like much later in the films. Like this is like the equivalent of the Dark Universe movies with the Mummy laying out everything and introducing that secret organization, talking about, you know, having Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and referencing all the other Universal movie monsters that are coming. Spectre, it wasn't even mentioned in the books until Thunderball, until that novel came out. And so, but they put it out there because they were too scared of actually blaming the Soviet Union for being the villain in this movie instead.
But yeah, to be fair though, I mean, that's it. Again, we've seen every Bond film. This has been out for 60 years. When you first saw it, go, Spectre, who gives a shit? You think about it, you don't give a second thought to it. It's just mentioned in passing. It's not like he got into detail and there was no kind of payoff with it. It's like, oh, I'm part of a criminal organization. Next. Like, all right, cool. No, remember that. Plus, you knew they're going to do it in the later films. I didn't have a problem with that.
Also didn't know that they were going to have. I mean, anytime you put a project out, you don't know that the next one's going to get there. And sometimes you can be guilty of throwing too much against the wall. And this may have been the one chance they actually had, regardless of whether it was a three-picture deal or not, to actually get Spectre out there.
But also, I think what Kevin said.
The one thing I want to check out, and I didn't, at the end of every Bond film, in the 60s and 70s especially, I don't think they do it now, it says James Bond will return in The Spy Who Loved Me or fucking...
Oh, no, they do that in every single one.
Even Dr. No, though, they did? In Dr. No?
So I didn't stick around for Dr. No to see if they did it, but they have done it in everyone since.
Yeah,
I watched it all the way to the end on Amazon today, and it just went and stopped. It never said James Bond will return in, at least in the streaming version on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, they probably didn't want to do it for that one, for sure. But like, but what Kevin says, though, is the fact that like they just kind of threw Spectre out there and it's just like, whatever. Like, that's why I think it's like, why would you like put that out there and not have it, you know, actually be, you know, a significant reveal? It's been like, obviously, you know, you don't always know if you're going to be able to get a chance to do it later. But like, it means nothing if you don't get to do it later, you know?
That's true.
It could build to the future films, though, if you do it right.
I don't think that's a black mark against this film because they threw Spectre out there without any real payoff.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it in the negative column or the naughty column for that.
Well, so let's see if we can throw this in the negative column. Dr. No doesn't do anything cool with those metal hands of his except break a statue. he doesn't even fight against a 007 well with his hands. Like, it's not as if he suddenly punches harder or inflicts more pain. 007 responds to him as if he's just fighting with a normal guy with hands that are just have an average man strength.
Yeah, he did anything cool with it, like, you know, pull out a plush toy from a machine and give it to a kid with those hands of his. Da-dunch. What else?
So, All right, so let's dig into what AC mentioned earlier, which is the casual racism of this entire movie. Pretty much every character of color that you see in this movie is subservient to some superior white character, to the point that they're even mocked by Bond's American counterpart, Felix Leiter. And we have a character, Quarrel, who is obviously is from Kingston there, meant to be. And they portray him as believing in, quote, native superstitions. They make fun of him for it. And then they also portray him as this drunk who carries around this jug of rum because that's the only way he can deal with being scared of going on this mission with Bond to the island.
Yeah, that was a weird pull. You see him pull out the rum and take a big, you know, the only thing missing from that jug was like a three X's on the side of that, yeah. Like a brown jug. Yeah. I thought, what the hell is the point of this? Like, this doesn't... I don't know if it's portraying him as a drunk, but it was just like, why is this shot in here? Like, this has no place whatsoever.
Which surprised me that was part of it, but and I'm sure there are other films that were earlier, but that did it. But I was surprised that a film from 1962 touched on sexual assault.
Yes, that's.
I was very surprised by that because I didn't remember having that as being a really even anything I heard the first couple of times I saw the film 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that seems like something that they got around just by not coming out and saying it. It's only implied, and you're kind of left to assume that that's what happened.
Well, but I don't even think. I mean, they don't say it, but they do. I mean, very matter of fact, say it. That they were aware enough to put that in, but then that they could still put out something, I mean, as out there as the Little Rascals.
So going back to the casual racism thing, we have two characters that are basically just yellow face characters. Both Miss Taro and the titular Dr. No are portrayed by actors and an actor and actress who are not Asian at all. Joseph Weissman is the one who they even give makeup to make him look vaguely Asian, I guess. but yeah, that's it's pretty egregious. And, you know, I think even in the 1960s, there were probably some pretty good Asian actors they could have gotten to play those roles. But Hollywood's going to Hollywood, I guess.
Well, and my perspective on that is we are looking at it through today's lens with that. And in reality, almost every film made back then, and I'm glad we're doing the things that we're doing now, wish we had done them earlier, but almost every film that was shot during that time frame, that would have been the case.
Yeah, sure. we're not gonna back and fault them for what was done at the time. That's something I refuse to do. It's you're right. You look at it now, you're like, not a good look. Everyone did it at the time. Didn't say it was right, but to go back and fault them was what was in vogue. You can't fault them for that.
It also feels like it stands out a little more than some of the other instances of things like this happening, though, because they surround Joseph Weissman with actual Asian extras.
Yeah, they did.
So, yeah, there's definitely casual racism all over this thing. But yeah, I don't entirely disagree with the idea since this is something that did happen a lot back then. But it definitely sucked then and it sucks now. So there's some details left out from the book that I feel like would have made this a lot more interesting. First of all, in the book, James Bond fights a giant squid. Where's that scene?
You're shitting me.
Yeah.
Awesome. Where? What part does he fight?
I don't know which part. This is only something that I read about online. I haven't actually read the book, but they did not include a scene where James Bond has to fight a giant squid.
Well, I mean, the book is always going to be better than the movie. Unless you can't read.
A lot of times.
Very rarely is it not. That would have been a cool scene. They didn't have the technology to shoot that back then. And look at what the fight choreography looked like now. Could you imagine if it had been just a dude in a suit with tentacles trying to fight Bond? That wouldn't have worked out. It looked like
probably,
that dude,
probably would have been more deadly than Dr. No, though.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't take much.
Yeah.
They were supposed to escape in the dragon buggy when they leave Dr. No's lair. And I feel like
it's a tank. It's not a dragon buggy. It's a fucking tank. Call it what it is.
But yeah, they were supposed to escape in the tank. That's what they do in the book. And I feel like a real missed opportunity to have James Bond cruising around in a giant tank that shoots fire out of its mouth.
Disagree, because how the fuck else would they then have him making out with Honey Rider and then unclip the boat from the Coast Guard and then drop a pithy comeback like, it looks like you don't need any help. See? Not thinking Hollywood, buddy.
Well, we'll get to the problem that I have with that moment a little bit later.
Sure.
And then I mentioned this earlier, but the fact that they really went out of their way to avoid making the villain the Soviet Union, because they are the villain in the book, but they were just too scared of stirring up trouble with the Soviet Union back in the 1960s. And that's why they put Spectre in the movie. So cowards, I say.
Well, I guess they were filming this. It had been 61, which was when the Bay of Pigs happened. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, it didn't stop Rambo from fucking them up in the Cold War and Rocky. So... We got balls.
Realize we are living in a 1980s movie right now, right?
Very, very much so.
You've got a stand-up comic and two former heavyweight champions fighting Russia.
Right.
All right. So this is my last point. It has several subpoints, I guess you could say, but this is about James Bond as a whole, a man who is a gambling addict, a pervert, and kind of a terrible spy.
Sounds like somebody be fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
Does it, though?
Well, but to your point about him being a terrible spy, he's horrible. But why do you think that is?
I mean, maybe because he's drinking a lot?
Well, I read something the other day, which is completely ridiculous, but it was a whole thing about how Bond really isn't the spy. He's the idiot they send in there. So everybody knows who he is. He doesn't have any secret identity, although, you know, he works for, what was it called?
The trading thing. I forgot.
Everything else has a secret identity but him. So like I read this whole thing that he's just the moron they send out to draw the attention, but you never see a backstory for that. So it can't be true.
So my counter to that is that they give him several instances that make him seem like he's a terrible spy, but there are so many inconsistencies that follow later that it completely undoes any of the cleverness that he actually exhibits in moments where they want him to look like a good spy.
Well, I think it's rooted in Fleming, and then the screenwriters coming through, and it's just it's their fantasy of what you would want to do if you were a spy, and that's supposed to come to us, right? You want to be in trouble. You don't want, like, if you're fantasizing about being a spy, you don't want the bad guy to not see you and you unplug the cord and you ride off into the sunset alone. You want everybody to know who you are, even the assassins that are trying to kill you, because you want to sleep with them and you want to be in the fight and you want to be in the car chase and you want to have that, oops, almost, they almost got me kind of moment. So you feel that yourself. And I think that's the reason. And he is—he's a horrible spy, but I think that's the point.
He's like Austin Powers without the over-the-top humor with it and silliness,
and the laugh track. But the Austin Powers, Elizabeth Hurley—I think it was Elizabeth Hurley, maybe the Beyonce, the hotel room.
In the first one.
The hotel room that Bond or the where they're being held on the island is almost identical. It's where they had to have designed the one from Austin Powers. You got the two rooms separate from each other, but not really separate. Some of the scenes, like I was watching, I have to go back and watch Austin Powers, but I would bet they're almost shot for shot from Dr. No.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a lot of Dr. No in Austin, the first Austin Powers movie.
And the where they steam clean them from the radioactive stuff. Same thing with Austin Powers. All that with the very beginning where they defrost them. That's all nods to.
So here's some of the things I'm going to say that I think that Bond was terrible at. And some of these don't necessarily fit in with him wanting to get into danger. They just like fit in with him making poor decisions. So first of all, he's using his unreliable gun. It's it jammed in a key moment. They mention, you know, M brings that up. It's like, so why do you keep using that? Why are you so stubborn about using the Walter PPK? He then tries to steal that gun from MI6 afterwards.
It was the Beretta. He uses the Walther.
Yeah.
But there's a great quote there that I forgot from the beginning. It's 00s have a license to kill, not a license to be killed.
Yes, exactly. But Bond apparently has a death wish because, first of all, he lets the henchman that he just stopped, who is pretending to be his chauffeur, have a quick cigarette. Why would you give him a chance to do anything?
Which is spoofed in Austin Powers again, as well, as we said.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when he gets to that crime scene where that radio signal was interrupted because the three blind mice killed that woman at that, you know, secret house or whatever it was, he picks the headphones up with a pencil, but then he puts his fingers on everything else.
He's a crime scene tainter.
Also, is a piece of hair really the best way to know if someone snuck into your closet?
Well, I mean, it worked apparently, but he didn't seem concerned at all that they had been all over his hotel room other than the bottle of vodka.
And then, so what's to stop the bottle of vodka in his drawer from being poisoned as well?
Yeah, good point.
That's a good point.
Is that all you have, or you have more notes?
I got a couple more things.
Sure.
They just fall asleep on the beach, no protection whatsoever. And for some reason, the mosquitoes only come out when they're in the river, not at night.
Yes.
Bond is worried about every single thing in his hotel room when he gets there with the hair and the vodka and everything. He has no problem immediately taking a cigarette from Dr. No's lair or drinking the tea that they're handed.
Right.
And then the last thing I have, he lets a nuclear reactor explode. He doesn't stop it. He lets a nuclear reactor explode. Yeah. This is a huge problem and will continue to be a problem in that area for years to come.
Give me so that's all you have then, correct?
Yeah, that's it.
Give me a number 1 to 10 in your thoughts on this film.
I'm going to give Dr. No a 3. And the 3 is because it has a lot of cultural touchstones that would influence movies later and obviously stuck around for James Bond. But as an introduction to this character and the first movie in the franchise, it's bad to me. It's laughably bad.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
AC, what notes do you have? Let's hear it, buddy.
Well, first off, I want to ask Brad, is it all Bond films or is it just this Bond film or this Bond film and a handful?
So I do think that there's a decent amount of the older James Bond films that suffer from the same problems. But I do think that they start to find a more playful identity and like become a little bit more confident. And it's just they start to be accepted more as fun. I feel like Dr. No, in a way, somewhat took itself maybe a little too seriously because they were just starting the franchise and still figuring it out. And much in the same way that like TV shows, you know, evolve over the years, I feel like Bond, you know, changed and they were able to embrace like what they wanted the franchise to become. So I think there are some good classic Bond entries. I think a lot of them have the same problems, but Dr. No, I think, is probably on the lower end of the spectrum.
I'll interrupt for 1 second, AC. Give me your favorite Bond and your favorite Bond film, just so I know where you stand here.
So my favorite Bond is probably, well, so I'm going to break it up through the modern and classic era. Modern era, it's Daniel Craig.
No, nope, it's a one answer.
Okay, if it's one answer, then I'm going to say Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, all right. and your favorite film?
GoldenEye.
Holy shit. Okay. Now we know. Now I know where we stand.
You don't like GoldenEye?
It's okay. The game's way better than the film is, that's for sure.
Well, that's of course.
Jumps off a dam on a motorcycle to catch an airplane.
Yeah.
What's not to like?
Yeah.
Awesome. I didn't say I didn't like it. I thought that to say that's your favorite is bold when there are I think there are many other entries I think that are better. Again, that's your opinion. That's fine. That's just saying for me. It's a Midland film for me. AC, sorry to interrupt you, pal. Go ahead.
Oh no! So I was curious because like I'm not a guy who specifically likes Bond films. I would struggle to tell you what my favorite Bond film is. I will tell you there is one definitive James Bond. And Kevin Gautier, look me in the eyes through Zoom when I tell you this. It's Roger Moore.
You are
Roger
out of
Moore
your
is
fucking
absolutely
mind.
James Bond. Roger Moore is James Bond. But so I'm not a giant fan of the genre, but they do well. They make money. It's a franchise and a character that has absolutely lived forever. So when you go back and watch this film, if you shine today's light on it, the stunts are going to look bad, and we are going to find, social things that we look at. But if you look at this film for what it was as a person walking in 1962, did you walk out of that film excited when you heard the next Bond film was coming out? Did you want to see it because of it? And I think, we're coming out of a time where most of the people, the viewing public, had been in war or supported the war effort. You've got some time removed from that. You've got some people that just missed it. Kind of a boring time. Everybody living in tract houses, if you believe the Wonder Years. And everything was good and wholesome. And all of a sudden, you've got sex, you've got adventure, you've got not just sex, you've got very blatant sex throughout the entire film. You've got a character that is a departure from the norm for what you're seeing, and an opportunity for everybody to watch it and go, hey, this is, I want to be that guy. I want to live that life. I think the film knocks that completely out of the park. And so to your points are all really good, but like
Right.
you go through this film and you're introducing people to poker that they've never even seen live in a casino, and I still have never played anywhere where the chips are squared, nor would I'll play hold'em all day. I wouldn't know how to play that game. But I mean, they're pushing the martini really hard. They're introducing people to that you've got the cool, awesome cars. You've got stuff blowing up, which, it was, did it look good when it blew up by today's standards? No. But did it look good by those standards? Yeah. Do I think we could take that script, just the three of us right now, and come up with a better telling of it? And if somebody gave us the money to do it, we could do it better right now. We couldn't do it for $9 million right now because things are, you can't do a movie like that for $9 million. So to me, that looking, and I, again, I've always been the, I hate, you got to look at it from through that lens. But for me to appreciate Bond, I kind of have to do that. Not that I hate Bond movies. If they're on, I'll watch them. But I've never personally in my life sat down and said, I, other than today, I'm going to watch a Bond film because it's a Bond film. Watching through the movie, they introduce Dr. No in what I think is a very effective way, with the voice in the room, with the tarantula in the box. I wish you had seen more of that. I wish he had been made more menacing throughout. I do think they spent a lot of time setting up who Bond is throughout. I think they spent too much time setting up the Jack Lord CIA character for as little as he really did. It was cool for me because I felt like I was watching an early episode of Hawaii 5-0. I used to have the Hawaii 5-0 State Police T-shirt in the late 90s because I thought it was fun and funny. I was flying on an airplane once, and as I was getting on, they upgraded me to first class, and I didn't know why. And I go to land, and they're like, "Sure is nice having a police officer on the flight." And I'm like, "Yeah, I bet it would. You think I'm a cop? Oh, can we land this plane fast? Can I get out of here now?" So I never impersonated a police officer, but they thought I was one. I was like, "It's just a joke, just Hawaii 5-0."
I really wish something happened where you had to play the role of Sky Marshal,
Oh.
and then tape some drunk down to a seat using like duct tape or whatever.
Well, I mean, I would do that with or without the t-shirt because I think that would be fun, and there would probably get more views than anything I've ever done. They put it up on TikTok now. That would be great. But there was a lot to me that was superfluous throughout the movie. Why do you care? Why do you spend all of that time taping the hair to the door, and then once you've seen it, you don't care. You pour your drink, you go ahead and go to bed. But I did like in that scene, and there are a couple of times throughout, even in the end of the movie, which it was a convention that they used that I actually thought added to the movie, but listening to both of you guys thought it might take some away. But I like the time that Bond's alone and not talking. he's in the room, he's doing stuff, and that scene is longer than most scenes would be without any dialogue. And I enjoyed that. I thought it moved the plot through better than a lot of the transitions in this film are really quick. Like the scene that there's no time when the professor realizes it's happened before he's already in the car racing. They don't waste any time there, but they do slow the film down in scenes like that. And I enjoyed that as part of the storytelling to include at the end of the movie. I think there wasn't a whole lot they could do there. There wasn't a whole lot that the script could have done. So because it drug out so long, and because nothing is, you're not hearing people other than the weird, or seeing people other than the weird extras cross that, you know, a second AD's going, wait 6 seconds and go ahead and walk. I thought that actually added to the suspense of the film that overrode the fact that the lead villain wasn't that strong a character. He wasn't well written or well cast. But I do think my favorite part of the finale, though, is the fact that everything looks like it's on the Price is Right. The danger meter looks like, you know, it's going off the cliff.
Oh, the green game, the price ranger. That's what it's called, price ranger, yeah. I think. Yes, excellent call.
But like, I liked that because that was new for then. Again, I'm probably not going to sit down and watch another James Bond film until somebody I'm with wants to watch it. But it created, or at least aided in the explosion of an entire genre of films. And so with that, and maybe it's my appreciation of being able to see that and connect it to other movies, but I thought it did a really good job of portraying something different than people were seeing. And if the people walked out of the theater after seeing that, I think they were excited and fun and happy to do it, as witnessed by we've got 50 years Bond now.
And it's the same director who started out, Terrence Young is his name. He did 5 or 6 of the first Bond films. So he learned by doing each one, getting better and better and better and better. And then Diamonds Are Forever was atrocious. But then, yeah, but at least it got better. So, yeah, it's to your point.
So, I mean, that's my overall thought on the film. If I were giving it, and I mean, like, I'm stingy with numbers. I gave Wolf of Wall Street a 3. I think I was being very generous when I did that. I would say this film is a 6. But for what it did with the genre, I'd give it a 6.5.
Fantastic score. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com. If you want to email and say hi to us, please do so at guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com, or if you want to advertise with us. But most importantly, please tell your friends about us. We love you and love when we turn on new fans to the show, and we thank you for doing so. Notes. The opening scene, as you mentioned, Brad, a very good, astute point. That's not Sean Connery jumping. By the way, he's shooting nowhere near his target. He's shooting at 1 o'clock. That bullet is going nowhere near his aim, his desired target. Did not get that. The Three Blind Mice song feels so out of place. More people would pay more attention to three blind guys than three regular dudes. And by the way, does this have a payoff that they're blind? No. I hated that aspect. That made no sense whatsoever. Didn't I like that?
They show you, though. They hint that they're not blind.
I know that.
When he reads the sign that's not in Braille, which made me laugh.
Right. And this doesn't pay off at all. Those guys, oh, okay, the 3 blind mice, and then bang, nothing later on. That's it. That's useless. I've seen every Bond film. I've been in casinos, as you know, AC, countless times, and I still can't understand nor play Baccarat at all, which is the game that Bond plays in every single, you know, except for, of course, Casino Royale. He plays poker.
Oh, fun fact real quick. I forgot to mention this. I have been to the Club Le Ambassadeur. Because I did a promotional event for No Time to Die, and I went out there and they put us up in the Dorchester Hotel. They took us to that club. We had like a super nice dinner, and then they took us to Land Rover's headquarters and did like a stunt driving course with us, with the actual No Time to Die stunt coordinators and drivers.
Can I have a job with you? Seriously, how bad is that? How badass is that? Someone tell me, I'm sure this, I work in corporate America as my day job, and I'm willing to bet after watching this, every scene that Bond and Moneypenny have together in all the Bond films are what they play in the first day on the job for. Here, see that, what they're doing? Don't ever do that at this company, ever. at all. This is your sexual harassment 101 training going on. M calls out Bond for being out at 3 in the morning, but this slave driver has him, Moneypenny, and the gun guy working at 3 a.m. He's the British Michael Scott. What an asshole. Guess who's never working for MI6? Me. Late night booty calls are great, but when she breaks into your house, it's time to drop her out of the rotation, fellas. Especially when she goes to your closet to dig out a shirt you wear, and she manages to find your golf clubs. Ooh, that is a stage 5 clinger alert, as they say in Wedding Crash. Wedding Crashers. What psychopath takes pictures of people coming out of the airport, even freelancing, for Christ's sakes? I mean, we've all been on planes. You've been on a flight for several hours. You always look like dog shit when you land. Hey, honey, grab the sweaty, cranky kids and let's get a family photo by the carousel. How much? $20? You got it. Get out. That doesn't happen. The fight scenes are so clumsily choreographed, as we said. The bad guys look so oafish. There's no flow. It's almost like a bunch of old white guys dancing. They're so rigid. There's nothing. No one's buying that these guys can throw punches nor land them.
But that dude wrestles alligators. Isn't that what he said?
I know. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
And then Bond just breaks out of his arms like it's nothing.
Yeah. Cyanide cigarettes work in 5 seconds, eh? Well, note to self, if I'm ever forced to see Seth Rogen in Broadway.
Ooh.
Harsh.
You'll go bald, like Sean Connery did long before this, by pulling strands out of hair in every hotel room that you're in to see people break in your room. By the way, he was wearing a hairpiece. He's wearing a hairpiece in his late 20s. And he had two hairpieces, one for dry scenes and one for wet scenes. Did you know? Now you know. And knowing is half the battle. When Bond fights Quarrel and Pussfo in that storage space, why do they have a bunch of empty red stripe boxes? Why would you not have them filled with beer? It's more fun to see the bottles fall out and break, be more realistic. And how can Quarrel sit on an empty box that supports his body weight? That doesn't happen.
There was an apple box there. Come on now.
Yeah. The female photographer breaks a flashbulb and stabs Quarrel in the face. He doesn't even flinch when she stabs him. He must be on some grade A heroin because I would have had her bite the table and stomp her goddamn head in if that was me.
It was the rum.
Yeah, you old Jamaican drunk. Is that what they're trying to say? The hotel receptionist giving Bond the top to bottom howdy do eyes. Can you blame her? Meow. Then again, if he did that to her, he would be an absolute creep and, you know, me too. Imagine you're the guy carrying, I forgot his name, the professor. You're that guy carrying the spider back from Dr. No's headquarters and you get some awkward questions. Oh, this? Oh, it's nothing. It's just a tarantula. Ah, no worries. I'm just going to go kill a British Secret Service agent. Yeah, I am kidding. How do you get that past everybody? All right.
Well, how did they know that the tarantula was going to land on him?
Exactly.
The fact that the animal wrangler was going to put it there.
Right. One quote I forgot to add. Dr. No runs the place like a concentration camp. Oh, really? Is he gassing Jamaicans who short pour his rum punches or red stripes? Harsh term to use, I think, but okay. To live in a world where women constantly ask Bond to go to dinner and then eventually bang, although 50% of these women usually end up trying to murder him. What are the odds? Fun life,
pretty,
though.
Pretty good. I mean, most of the women in my life have tried to kill me at some point or another.
Yeah, with divorce suits. And
I didn't
alimony.
Have to pay any. No alimony. No alimony.
Who is your lawyer?
Me. All right.
In some of these head-on shots of Bond driving, they don't even pretend that he's in front of a screen. His hair doesn't move except for one scene because he's driving 55 miles an hour and that shit is lacquered on because he's not moving. There's no way. That hairpiece is firmly has Gorilla Glue, Crazy Glue, whatever you want. We'll be a sponsor for you kind of glue, whatever it is. If I hear underneath the mango tree one more goddamn time, it is because I'm in Guantanamo Bay for terrorist activity. Because that song is torture. For 60 years now, Ursula Andress coming out of the water has been fueling boners. Well done, ma'am. Well done.
I have one page of notes that's just Ursula Andress.
Right. And I love how they recreated that with Halle Berry, who did work for her. And then they tried with that with Daniel Craig in Casino Royale. Did anyone expect Honey Rider to drop some serious exposition of being a rape victim and then killing her attacker?
No, I did.
It's a ballsy move, but all right, good on her for getting back.
But then she asked, should I have not done that?
Yeah. Was that like an Urkel moment for her?
Yeah. And well, don't make a habit of it.
So Bond, who knows better, fires a Walther PPK at a tank.
He takes out a headlight.
Good. That's going to stop a tank and a flamethrower.
A dragon, though.
Yeah. And then Quarrel is shooting using a revolver. And when that tank gets really close, Quarrel, doesn't run away from the flamethrower and then gets turned into jerk beef. Come on. You see this tank roll up on you and then he doesn't move. Let me get this straight, fellas. A car wash on humans gets rid of radioactivity. Good to know. Time to go to Acacia and Chernobyl now.
Where did the bathrobes and slippers, like, they just have these nice bathrobes and slippers hanging around?
Right. Sean Connery's a fantastic actor, but when he passed out on drugs or in that coffee, that's like watching someone in experimental theater do Macbeth. So it's such exaggerated movements for someone when passing out. Have you ever seen someone pass out? It's a lot more graceful and a lot more subtle. He's having a seizure while passing out. Honey Rider did it best in Cheap Mom. Sure. Hey, how does James Bond get into bed after passing out on the floor?
Doctor knows metal claw.
Yeah. You're right, AC. The flow is great with the suspense with Dr. No, though you don't see him for a while. The minute they get on that island, the flow has now ebbed. This pace came to a grinding halt when they got the crab key. The white guy playing Dr. No, not looking very Chinese in their best efforts. They couldn't get the guy who played David Lo Pan from Big Trouble in Little China. For Christ's sakes, he was in Chinatown a few years later. I'm sure he was available.
Was he German in the book, half German, half Asian?
Yes.
Or is that just what they?
I didn't read the book. I haven't read any James Bond books. I'm wondering if I should. When Dr. No is giving his origin story, it sounds like he's making up a Mad Libs as he goes along. Bond crawling through that tunnel when he escapes his room takes way too long. Oh,
seriously.
Drags. I forgot how boring of a villain Dr. No is. We get him for 15 minutes. There's hardly any memorable moments. And he goes out like Boba Fett did, a true bitch. He's all tell and no show. There's nothing about that guy that strikes fear except his voice in the entire film. This film has no danger, no real danger. And Dr. No, the most boring backstory I've ever heard. Yes, it's the origin of Spectre. Cool. We talk about it for 2 seconds and forget about it. He has metal claws for hands, but then, big deal, so do people who got in industrial accidents. Nothing is done with these things. The overall plot, no one talked about this. This plot is murky. Crab Key is doing radioactive stuff to do exactly what with space shuttles at Cape Canaveral. Did you guys know what the whole point of that was? I had to Google. Be honest. Did you know, Brad?
No, I had no clue.
Seriously, I had to look up to clarify. I'd be like, why is this such a dastardly plan? Because you're stopping a rocket launch for a bit, I guess.
To disrupt the Project Mercury space launch with an atomic-powered radio beam. I've seen this movie. I own this movie. I've never grasped that. That was the whole overall world domination plot in this film. That was just, again, murky, muddled, and they danced right over it.
They do say synchronized radio beam for Top Link at least 5 times.
Right. What does that
mean? They never explain what it does. Yeah.
All of us non-space engineers, what the fuck is happening? Bond unties the rope from the boat after waiting to be rescued so he can bang Honey Rider again. And this, of course, starting the reoccurring trope in every Bond film that got hacky. You know, they'd be in the boat. They'd have the parachute open or they'd have the little canopy fly open so they couldn't see what's going on. That's one thing I go, oh, we're going to beat that drum again. As I've said before, I own this film. I've seen this a ton of times. This has lost a lot on the fastball. I started watching Bond films when the TBS marathons would go down, and I love, that's how I got into these. I don't know which was the first one I've seen. I got to guess it's either this, Goldfinger, Thunderball, War, Note from Russia with Love were the first ones I've seen. This is one of the, it's a 60-year-old film. I get it. So You're going to have to grade on the curve. Again, some of the themes you had mentioned before, Brad, you're right. Wouldn't fly today. Can't penalize it now. This started one of the greatest franchises of all time. The first half starts out fine. I'm with it. I'm on board. Enough tensions being built up. Cool. But the second half of this film slams headfirst into a telephone pole at 70 miles an hour. That tension that was built up comes out like a leaky fart. The last 15 minutes are so anticlimactic. So what? They get captured. Nothing happens. So what? He has dinner with them. It's a Mad Libs. So what? So what? So I asked so what so many times. It's terrible. This film does not pass the remote test for me. And I love, and I, people ask, what are your favorite Bond films? Thunderball, Goldfinger. And I said, Dr. No was part of my top five. No longer. This does not pass the remote test for me. This lost a lot. 5.5 out of 10. I was really surprised in how much this had just lost a lot. That second half really, really said, holy shit, this wasn't as good as I recall it. So there you have it. So, and the correct answer is the best Sean Connery is the best James Bond. And that's laughable. You think Roger Moore is. He's so cute. That guy, you think the choreography is bad in that? Watch every Roger Moore James Bond. There is no chance that that guy's fighting anybody, especially Jaws in Moonraker and the other one. He's not throwing a punch that's landing. And he's just so cheeky in the glip. No, I'm not buying that. You think Connery's a goof in this? You think that he's going to be a successful secret agent in those other films? No. Roger Moore is the worst Bond film. Brosnan is my number three after Roger Craig. He was the manager for the San Francisco Giants. Daniel Craig is the second best Bond
film. So you're saying Moore is worse than Lazenby or Dalton?
Yes.
You are out of your mind.
Watch any of those Bond films that he's in, and they are all of them. Live and Let Die was the best, and by best, I mean about a five. The rest are terrible.
You're saying Dalton's movie was better than Moore.
I haven't rewatched them in a long time. They weren't that bad. I haven't seen them in a long time, to be completely fair. I'm owed a rewatch, that's for sure.
The Lazenby film was okay.
It was good.
He was stupid for not signing a contract and sticking around and being Bond.
Right.
But Timothy Dalton is the worst Bond.
I have to rewatch and see. I'll be fair. I'll rewatch and see. But as what I have in the memory now, no dice. Critics, 5-star reviews. The first of the James Bond films, I trust there will be others, way to go. Look at you, foreshadowing champion, you. Has the air of knowing exactly what it is up to, and that has not been common in British thrillers since the day Hitchcock took himself off to America. I don't know what he was trying to, or she was trying to convey with that point. Do you, fellas?
No, not at all. Okay,
thought so. By the way, a lot of these critics, it's like they want to be Trent Crim of The Independent and Ted Lasso, but without the charm.
Brilliant. They're writing reviews on Amazon. They're not.
No, no, no. These are the critics 5-star, not the critics. Amazon. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're on critics. Brilliant lead actor and villain hold the film together despite a few flaws. The fact that it got so much right from the start is a real testament to the film series. The villain does not hold the film together. Bond does.
That critic wanted to get invited to the next premiere.
Yeah, is he friends with Joseph Wiseman? I mean, he's a bottom five Bond villain. There's no one's going to argue that point, right? Thank you. If you've given up on the many iterations of the Bond franchise, it is worth shaking off all that adaptation decay and going back to the original, which is more fun and less sexist than many of the later films.
This film was pretty sexist.
About as perfect as a franchise starter as you can imagine, and certainly accomplishes the task of leaving you eagerly anticipating Bond's next adventure. Perfect. They had the balls to put that word in this review. Stop it. Critics, 1-star reviews. The first half hour I took to be a fairly good spoof on a sex espionage film in general. Then Bond lands on Dr. No's atomic island, and science fiction takes over with lethal results in every sense of the word.
Man, I wish Bond ended up on that island after the first half hour. We could have saved a lot of time.
Yeah, right. The film geek in me wants to praise it, but the film critic in me wants to expose its flaws. I still have a soft spot for it, but if I'm being truly honest, it's kind of lackluster. I would agree. Sean Connery, actually put Scan Connery because I copy and paste, is such a disappointingly wooden and boorish Bond that the script's touches of grim humor go for less than they need. No. Amazon 5-star reviews. Ian Fleming was a racist and filled his stories with stereotypes of non-whites. That was taken up by the early Bond films, with Dr. No being the cunning and plotting Oriental. Orientals are rugs, not people. Actually, a white guy with makeup being a perfect example. Of course, there's got to be Bond girls, and that is personified by the impeccable Ursula Andress, who, by the way, had her voice dubbed by a British actress because the director didn't think her accent would be understandable by a large audience. Together, this makes Dr. No not only the origins of the entire franchise, but one of the best releases as well. How does that go from that beginning of the review to a attaboy?
Yeah, it started off with, this movie is racist, but you know what? Good stuff.
Yeah, good on you. But watching Connery's portrayal, I couldn't help but wish his films had enjoyed the superior effects and budgets of the Daniel Craig films. All respect to Craig, he's just not as suave, urbane, or capital C cool as Connery. I love the outright terror in Connery's eyes as he waits for the spider to climb off of his shoulder. Topped by the revulsion he shows that anyone could stoop so low after he killed the thing. The verbal duel with Dr. No is the best dialogue between Bond and any villain, including the Craig films. I guess he didn't see Goldfinger. My wife and I are huge Sean Connery fans and James Bond fans. When the first James Bond film hit the theater, I can remember an acrimonious discussion with my future mother-in-law about how my future wife was not allowed to see, quote, those kind of movies. My wife and I were high school teenagers at the time. And that guy should have followed with, and now my mother-in-law is dead, and my wife can watch as many James Bond films as she wants to. My grandson is in the fifth grade and just discovered James Bond. He asked to watch the very first James Bond movie, Dr. No, and I was delighted that Amazon.com Prime Video offered Dr. No as a selection. My grandson and I really enjoyed the movie. My Amazon Prime Video account has allowed my family to watch old movies and TV shows that they enjoy. See, even old people can't edit while writing out a review. Did you guys catch that too?
I mean, I'm proud he was able to type it on the computer, though.
I mean, that honestly, to me, that just sounds like someone doing an Amazon Prime commercial. So,
right? The only thing missing was a Werther's original candy sucking in his mouth as he typed that out, or she typed that out.
Yeah, I like Werther's.
You are of a certain age.
True.
Amazon one-star reviews. James Bond can kill any random crony, but a woman killing a rapist is frowned upon. Great. Rolling eyes emoji. Who's frowning on that?
Well, he tells her in it, well, I wouldn't make a habit of it. She asked him permission. Should I have not done that? And then he's like, well, I wouldn't make a habit of it. I think they mistook that joke where he's saying, don't kill me.
Right.
Yeah.
Irony is not lost on the
one-star Amazon reviewers, yeah.
I think the moment really hits home is when Bond has a tarantula crawling on his shoulder, parentheses, you can see the glass separating the two, and then finally throws it on the floor. He lunges at it and hammers with his shoe 5 or 6 times as the orchestra dramatically accentuates each hit. Connery's hair flop all over the place. It's just a very disheveled moment for Bond. Very 50s. It just kills the whole movie. There's a lot wrong with that statement.
That's what killed the movie for you?
50s. I mean, we're not even getting the decade right. He's right about the orchestra. That wasn't needed banging out the spider. I liked it, but after all, it's an old film. Smiley face emoji. This movie is extremely slow. The Three Blind Mice song at the beginning. Can you believe that? The reason I gave this one star is because of Sean Connery's superb acting. What kind of bizarre world are we living in, fellas?
Yeah.
I don't know. AC Rowe.
Oscar worthy.
Did our new friend Brad Oman gut the sacred cow?
I mean, I think Brad made really good, clear points. Again, it's the birthplace of a genre of films. I don't think there's anything he could have done to gut the cow. And 60 years worth of filmmaking has shown that it accomplished its goal. Good points. It's not my favorite film of all time. But no, I don't think he gutted the cow.
Wow. Bold statement. I give credit. I will say this was a kind of a, I'll give it a half gutting because, and you say no, but the film kind of gutted itself the way it played out in the second half. As I said, it just took things down a notch for me. So AC says no, I say half. So whatever, let's just call it a quarter. Cool enough. Brad Oman, thanks again for coming on. Check him out on Slash Film. AC Rowe, he'd love to tell you what he's up to, but the NDAs tell him he can't do that. Otherwise, he'll be sitting the rest of his life in court paying court costs, and we don't want that. But for us at Gutting the Sacred Cow, we thank you all so much for hanging out with us, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Aloha.